It's August. I can't believe it. The summer is going, almost gone. Well, what's the weather like? And that's one of the most important things since we're going into the weekend. Now, this afternoon, we were supposed to have a 30% chance of thunderstorms and about a 20% chance tonight. I don't know where you are in the area, but so far it's been a very sunny day. Tomorrow, there is a 40% chance of thunderstorms, and that goes into tomorrow night. And by tomorrow, it's actually, they say it's a slight chance before 9 a.m. tomorrow, then a slight chance of showers between 9 and 3, and then, of course, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m. So, you know, get out there, maybe not too early, but get out there tomorrow. Probably will be fairly nice during most of the day. By Saturday night, again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 3 a.m. By Sunday, there's a slight chance of showers before 9 a.m., and then a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m. So we kind of work things in between storms, I guess, or between the rain, which, depending on the rain, probably won't be bad. Looks like Sunday would be the better day because there is only a slight chance of showers and then a slight chance of thunderstorms. By Monday, of course, everybody's back to work. It'll be sunny, high of about 85 degrees. So may have to skip around kind of over the weekend to get out there when it's not raining. So I'm Pat Smits, and we'll be back. Actually, I want to play a couple spots to tell you who brought you the weather. And then we'll be back, and the program, It's the Law. And I am going to comment on this Fox News, if you happen to hear it today. It's very interesting as to where the news comes from, as to what you're hearing. But I do have some comments on that based on, in any event, you don't have to agree with me, you don't have to agree with Fox News, but actually people need to listen or watch news on different channels because you wouldn't believe you're hearing about the same thing. So back in just a moment.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Okay, I'm Pat Smits. I'm back and talking about some of the news stories. And actually, there's some, I thought there was some interesting statistics about incarceration in the United States that I wanted to talk about. But first of all, I have to comment about the Fox News that came on just before my program started. And they were talking about, or Mr. Califano was talking about, apparently, this is a plan that Jared Kushner has been pushing, and the so-called merit-based immigration plan. And, of course, that makes it look like, we're only allowing people in this country who don't have any right to be here. But when I heard that, it touched something because I think everyone in this country, in this state, in this listening audience should go back into your own family history. And how many of us would really be here if we, or I guess our ancestors, had to face a merit-based immigration plan? And it would be a very interesting statistic because so often, I'm not sure that I know of anyone who came, except maybe if they came from England or possibly France, maybe even Germany, as long as they weren't Jewish, because they didn't count merit if you were Jewish and coming here, even though many people who were very successful in Europe, and especially many, many Jewish immigrants had been very successful. And in fact, it's very, I think it's interesting with all the immigrants who came here, Jewish immigrants, who actually came and started chicken farms or came to New Jersey, and I don't know a lot about that history, but there were many Jewish immigrants who certainly weren't chicken farmers in Europe, but came here, and that was the way they got their start in the United States. But the point is, merit-based immigration. If you look back into your own family history, I don't think that many of us would be able to say that our ancestors were able to come here based on merit. Many of them, obviously, I'm not saying they didn't come here legally, but the immigration laws were very different. It depended basically on, you know, how many people were allowed from the various countries. Another comment on that, and it just really is, I'm sure it's not only my circle of friends and acquaintances, but I can't tell you the number of people that I know who came here from the so-called, excuse me, but that's what our president called them, the shithole countries, who are now extremely successful. I know, for example, someone who came from Africa, well, more than one person who came from Africa, but the one I'm thinking about came here from Africa to go to college. He overstayed his visa, didn't have enough money to finish college, took him a number of years to finish undergraduate school, went into medical school, obviously very bright, was accepted in medical school, started attending medical school, but could not borrow money because he didn't have a green card or citizenship. Now, luckily, fortuitously, and I don't think this was planned, but he met and married an American citizen. And as a result, he was able to get his green card and get his citizenship. So without that, he would not have been able to become a green card holder and a citizen. So that's just one person. I know someone else who came here, was basically pushed over the border by his parents as a young teenager, and he ended up first in California and then ultimately came east, does not live in New Jersey, is today a citizen, and has one, the children I know, one is at a very prestigious university in New York. Another is in a university in England. This man is obviously very successful. And guess why he's here? He happened to marry a woman from Puerto Rico. Only way that he could have ever gotten a green card or citizenship is because he married somebody from Puerto Rico. I know other successful business people who, unfortunately, are still undocumented and have little or no chance of ever making it. Now, it also, however, bothers me that this so-called merit, to say that somebody only has merit because they're educated or they can come here and work in a corporation, you know, it's just not the way immigrants came to this country, most of them, and I know many first-generation or second-generation people whose family came here, worked very menial jobs. However, they've been able to get an education, and they are very, very successful. If their family, who would not have had merit, would not have been able to be here, would not have been able to come here based on a merit-based immigration plan, these people would not be here. So, you know, look around your friends, your family, and I know I'm on a rant, but I understand what is happening, and this so-called merit-based immigration plan It's just an elitist plan, and frankly, I think very racially motivated, because it's very easy to have so-called merit if you come from certain countries where you were able to get a good education, for example. But there are other countries that you're not going to be able to get a good education. And if you come here based on merit, you probably are not escaping the violence and the horrible violence that is happening in countries like Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, because the wealthy people in those countries are able to come here. And in fact, surprisingly, I was surprised to hear that somebody is going to be able to have a family member is coming here to visit from one of those countries. And I thought that there was it would be much more difficult because of where they were coming from and the concern that people come here on a legitimate visitor's visa and then overstay their visa. And of course, you know, if you're Caucasian and maybe are here from England or France or Norway or Sweden, it'll be much easier if you overstay your visa to just blend in. So anyway, that's my rant for today. You don't have to agree with me, but I think most of us should look back on our own background to see if our families would have been able to come here originally. I know my family came very early for the Irish. They came earlier than most of the Irish came here. But in fact, you know, they came and they came through Canada, came into the United States, into Wisconsin. But I doubt, from what I know about the family, pretty much they were farmers. So I would be surprised if they would have been welcome with open arms. Certainly, so many of the other immigrants that came, even those from Sweden and Norway when they came earlier, some of them were escaping religious prosecution, or persecution, I should say, not prosecution, persecution. But how many of the people out there who are of Italian descent, you know, came poor? Irish were poor. A lot of discrimination when they first came, but everybody has blended in. Second, third generations are very successful. So anyway, I'll stop now, and I'm sure that many of you have turned me off even before I got this far. So what is happening? I guess now I go from that to talking about incarceration, because I think this is very interesting, at least I thought it was, and if anyone is interested, I suggest that you go on the website. It's called prisonpolicy.org/global/2018, and it's talking about states of incarceration in a global context. And so what they did is they ranked the states and different countries. And what I'm going to talk to you about is world incarceration rates if every state in the United States was a country. Because instead of just using the United States, although I have those statistics, it's more interesting to see the incarceration rate in the United States. And in 2018, Oklahoma now has the highest incarceration rate in the United States. And guess who they unseated? Louisiana. And Louisiana has a long-held position as what we like to quote, the world's prison capital. So actually, by comparison, states like New York, Massachusetts, etc., appear progressive, and however, those states lock up more people at a higher rate than nearly every other country. And however, New Jersey is really pretty, you know, we're great. The incarceration rate in the United States overall is 698 per 100,000 people, population. And New Jersey, and the graph, if you're interested in it, go on to that website, because the graph on this website shows the number of people in state prisons, local jails, federal prisons, and other systems of confinement from each United States, U.S. state, and other countries per 100,000 people in that state, and then the incarceration rate per 100,000 people in the countries. They used only countries with a population of at least 500,000 people. And so it's very interesting, because what happened is they used and imagined every state as an independent nation in order to show the variety and how it varies from state to state. So 23 states in the United States would have the highest incarceration rate in the world. And that's higher even than the United States, of course. Massachusetts is the state with the lowest incarceration rate in the nation. But even there, they would rank ninth in the world, just below Brazil, and followed closely by countries like Belarus, Turkey, Iran, and South Africa. Now, Oklahoma, as compared to New Jersey, Oklahoma has 1,079 people, women and men, incarcerated per 100,000. New Jersey really works, and it's very, you know, it's a good statistic in New Jersey. We only have 407 men and women incarcerated per 100,000. New York has 443. The lowest, as I said, Massachusetts, it's 324. Minnesota, 364. But the highest states, can you imagine? I don't think it would be hard to guess. Although maybe Oklahoma wouldn't be thought of as one of the highest, they rank as follows: Oklahoma, Louisiana, and so Oklahoma did not beat out Louisiana by much. Then there's Mississippi, and they all have more than 1,000 people per 100,000 of population. Get down to the 900s, you have Georgia, which is 970, so almost 1,000. Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, then we go to Texas, Arizona, Kentucky, Missouri, South Dakota, and Tennessee. So I guess it's no surprise that the southern states have the highest incarceration rates. But Pennsylvania, our next-door neighbor, is 725 people per 100,000. So they're higher than the U.S. average, which is 698 people per 100,000. So this is an interesting statistic, maybe for some of us, I think it is. But many countries that rank alongside the least punitive U.S. states are places like Turkmenistan, Thailand, Rwanda, and Russia. And they all have authoritarian governments, or have recently experienced large-scale internal armed conflicts. So others struggle with violent crime on a scale far beyond that in the United States, including El Salvador, Russia, Panama, Costa Rica, and Brazil. Now, they all have murder rates higher than double that of the United States. Yet, the United States tops them all in incarcerations. So, and this article said even progressive states like New Jersey, with incarceration rates below the national average, continue to lock people up at more than double the rates of our closest international allies. So, interestingly, for four decades, the United States has been engaged in a globally unprecedented experiment to make every part of its criminal justice system more expansive and more punitive. And as a result, incarceration has become the nation's default response to crime. So apparently 70% of convictions result in confinement, far more than other developed nations with comparable crime rates. And it is recognized that there's finally serious talk about change. This group says there's little action that would bring the United States to an incarceration rate on par with other stable democracies. Now, as I said, this is 2018. I certainly would be interested in finding out in New Jersey what that number would be if we had not had bail reform. And bail reform has been a godsend, because obviously if people are guilty, we don't want them running the street. But what had happened for many, many, many years is that there were people locked up awaiting trial just because they didn't have enough money to either pay a bail bondsman or to pay a small cash bail. I remember how many times that I appeared in courts, for example, in Patterson and Newark, and they would bring in just 10, 20, 30 men who were incarcerated, and they were incarcerated for either, very petty offenses or for failure to provide child support and pay child support. And in the child support cases, it was just apparent that these were men who could not find jobs, most of them. I mean, I'm not saying there weren't some exceptions. But in any event, according to this article, the incremental changes in recent years aren't enough to counteract the bad policy choices built up in every state over decades. And, of course, not only will bail reform help, but if there's a look at, the three strikes and out, for example, some of those crimes could be what most people would think is not petty, but pretty minimal. So there's, mass incarceration, the whole pie is a report that takes a comprehensive view of confinement in the United States. And it goes beyond the commonly recorded and reported statistics by more than 10,000 people. In other words, they did a very, very large survey to get this information. And so they concluded and include in these confined populations in the total incarceration rate of the United States. So in most states, incarcerations in the commitments to psychiatric hospital as a result of criminal charges or convictions, although they are not typically included in official statistics that aggregate data about jails and prisons, they have done this. They used justice-involved youth held in juvenile residential facilities, people detained by the U.S. Marshals Service, many of them pre-trial, people detained for immigration offenses, or just detained because they're not documented, sex offenders indefinitely detained or committed in civil commitment centers, and that happens after they complete a sentence and are still then indefinitely held. They also included those committed to psychiatric hospitals as a result of criminal charges or convictions. Now, as I said, these kind of putting that group together, not usually part of those statistics. Now, one of the reasons that New Jersey, I think New Jersey would be lower, I know it would be lower than the number if, in fact, they did not count a number of people detained by the U.S. Marshals Service, because that would certainly raise the number in New Jersey, because there are so many people detained here in New Jersey. And I'm not even sure, for example, well, I'm sure that not every state has a center or, you know, detention center in the state. So that, you know, you're not, from that standpoint, you're not comparing apples to apples. But, you know, even with that, New Jersey ranks very low. And as I said, I think it's because we don't incarcerate people. Well, we don't usually incarcerate people pre-trial unless they're a danger and the judges have a list of criteria that they have to use to determine whether someone can be held without bail. And, for example, one of the recent examples is Jeffrey Epstein in New York. He obviously would have been able to make bail almost irrespective of the amount of bail that was set. However, he was a flight danger, and the judge didn't focus on the flight danger as much as focused on the fact that he was a predator and that he could not be released as far as because of safety of the community. So he was a hazard to allow this man to go back out into the community, and I think part of that reason is that they found that even when he was released, he was continuing to violate and continuing to do illegal things with respect to children. So that the fact that this policy group, the prison policy organization, used a broader view of incarceration is probably good because, I shouldn't say probably good, I think it's good because it really shows true statistics and they take a broader view of incarceration and it creates a unique U.S. data set that offers a complete look at all kinds of justice-related confinement in each state. And they, there's an appendix, there's, you know, they have statistics, as I said, from all over, you know, not just the United States, and also District of Columbia and the other, well, they chose, I should say, they chose to include the District of Columbia, American Samoa, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, and they did not include those in their main graph in the report, but they did make separate comparison of these places. However, the incarceration data for the District of Columbia and the territories where such information exists were put into an appendix, and it was pretty amazing. The District of Columbia incarceration rate was 1,153 per 100,000. So that would be top of the list. In fact, you know, if you want to call wins, they won out over Oklahoma and any of the other states. So the Prison Policy Initiative reports are collaborative efforts. And so even if there's some, you know, question about some of the numbers, they're certainly close enough that it should give us pause. And so beyond the authors of the report, you know, are thanking many different people with respect to how they're collecting the information. And they had a grant from the Public Welfare Foundation as well as individual donors, and that's how they had the resources to do it. I do want to say one more thing about the Prison Policy Initiative. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan initiative. And from what I can gather, it really is nonpartisan. And it was founded about 18 years ago to expose the broader harm of mass criminalization and also hopefully to spark advocacy campaigns to create a more just society. And anyone who's dealt at all with the criminal justice system knows the disparity, the difficulties, and the higher incarceration rate for minorities who commit the same crimes as Caucasians. And this is really significant. And, for example, that crimes such as cocaine, there's no difference really between crack cocaine and cocaine, and yet the incarceration rate and the number of years that people are sentenced is much higher for crack cocaine than it was for cocaine. So, you know, frankly, I think that very few middle and upper middle class people are even arrested for cocaine. And when they do, they work things out, put it that way. In fact, another thing that is very interesting to me is how often, right here in New Jersey, recently I was involved in something that shows how, you know, municipal court prosecutors kind of work things out with defense lawyers if in so many cases. And in fact, when anyone calls me, I do not handle municipal court. I was there recently, but it was with a pro bono matter. But I don't, that's not my forte. I don't do it. There are certain attorneys who are known to do a lot of municipal court work. And, you know, for example, I know someone in Mercer County, and if I ever had to go to municipal court, he'd be the person that I would retain. So, and these attorneys so often plea bargain something, plea bargain it down. And the case I'm thinking of is the attorney was able to plea bargain an assault. And if you saw the police report, as I did, you know, there should have been a trial on the assault. Instead, there was a plea bargain down to, actually, it was a nonsense. How do I say this? I didn't even see how they could plea bargain from the original assault case down to what this person was ultimately allowed to plead guilty to. You know. So anyway, there's also the policy, prison policy initiatives research is also designed to reshape debates around mass incarceration by offering a big picture view of critical policy issues such as probation and parole, women's incarceration, and youth confinement. And I'm sure that not only are they interested, but most people are interested in bail reform, which by all accounts has been incredibly successful in New Jersey. So let me tell you about some of our sponsors, and then we'll be back with a little bit more of the law that's going on, the cases that have been decided this week or this month. This month and last month.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterton Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterton Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterton-chamber.org. The Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hi, I'm back. Pat Smith's talking about the law. Also wanted to give you a couple of public announcements. One of our good friends, my good friend, everybody's good friend, or at least acquaintance, Richard Gershner. If you know Richard, he was one of the forces behind this radio station. He worked for WDVR. Probably a volunteer for WDVR for many years. He also worked with Chris Phelan to start the radio station here. But what many people don't know, or I guess many people do know, that Richard is an accomplished artist, and he has a display at the Hunterton County Library on Route 12, and I think it started yesterday, August 1st, and I'm not sure how many weeks, if it's going to be there for the entire month of August. But get down there and look at it. I mean, he's really, good artist, whether or not you collect his type of art. He's really good. And if you don't know him, I'm not sure when he's going to be there. They probably had a reception, and I'm not sure exactly when that was, but be sure to stop in. You can go anytime, and his art is there, and it will make your day, put it that way. The other thing that I wanted to give people a heads up about a little bit early, but this year the Guardianship One-on-One Barn Dance. That's Harry Copeland. It honors Harry. It was, in fact, it's called the Harry Copeland Barn Dance. It is going to take place on October 12th at the Buffalo Farm. This is the second year it will be at the Buffalo Farm. And it's really a lot of fun. Get you out there to do some square dancing, maybe, but you can sit and watch. It was really a lot of fun. Good band. I think the DJ will be, I think there'll be the DJ, Dr. D will be there again. I'm not sure about that. Lots of good food, and really lots of good food and a lot of fun. If you happen to have a pair of boots in that closet of yours, you can drag them out. But if not, just mark your calendar, October 12th, Barn Dance, and it'll be reasonably priced, and in fact, probably couldn't go out for dinner, and in fact could not go out to dinner at some places for what the charge will be. And of course, it benefits the volunteer guardianship one-on-one. So you'll be hearing more about that as time goes on. But that is really a fun night. So what's happening in cases? One thing is there was a Ocean County jury awarded $1.46 million in an uninsured, it was an underinsured motorist claim by a woman who suffered spinal injuries in a rear-end crash, Kaufman versus Jenkins. So that, unfortunately uninsured motorists and people who have no insurance. So we have both underinsured and people without insurance at all. Big problem in New Jersey because we all pay for it. We pay for it in our underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage. Those of you who know me, I guess I'm pretty radical on most things. I do believe that everyone who qualifies, meaning they're the right age, their age and can pass the test, should be able to get a driver's license. On the other hand, I also believe that there should be a lot more enforcement of motorists who are driving without insurance, and also the underinsured motorists. I think that the insurance is basically too low. In other words, driving's a privilege. I think people should have to carry more insurance than they have to carry under the law. I know that people will argue, well, people can't afford it. However, maybe there could be some other restrictions on people who don't have sufficient insurance. Maybe their driving should be restricted to driving to and from work. I don't know. I'm just saying that I do believe that everyone should have a license and should have to have insurance, or the vehicle has to have insurance. But the reason for everyone having a license is, frankly, there are too many people driving not only their own vehicles, but someone else's work vehicle. And they're doing it legitimately because they're working for the employer. But the employer may have insurance on that vehicle, but the driver is uninsured. So that's my little rant on that one. But in this case, this jury awarded $1.455 million to an underinsured motorist, on an underinsured motorist claim because this woman suffered spinal injuries in a rear-end crash. I know that sounds like a ton of money, but for most of us, we would not want to have the spinal injuries. Sounds very serious, and that is should be a real concern. So there was an arbitrator's decision to dismiss a petitioner's claim, and the petitioner was U.S. Masters Residential Property, USA Fund. It was against the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. And the petitioner submitted a claim for Spill Act money for its multi-lot property in Bayonne that was affected by Superstorm Sandy. The petitioner alleged that floodwaters from Sandy contaminated petroleum-based toxins. And the DEP in New Jersey interpreted the results of petitioner's site remediation professional to indicate soil contaminated by historic fill. And as a result, they denied the petitioner's claim. So the state expert said that the problem was caused by historic fill. And the petitioner then requested arbitration, alleging that during arbitration, the DEP changed the reasons for its denial of petitioner's claim. So petitioner noted that the DEP's expert opined that a diffuse anthropologic pollution, which consisted of broadly distributed contaminants from multiple sources, was likely an additional source of contamination. And then the arbitrator denied petitioner's motion to exclude the report based on DEP's allegedly dilatory tactics. And the arbitrator ultimately rendered a decision dismissing petitioner's claim, finding that the petitioner had not proven by a preponderance of the evidence that its property was damaged, by this post-Sandy discharge. That's got to be a very tough thing to try to prove. So instead, the arbitration found that it was likely that the contamination was caused by settlement at the bottom of nearby waterways. And the appellate division affirmed the arbitrator's decision. And then what happened on appeal, because this case went to the Supreme Court, the New Jersey Supreme Court. So it went up from arbitration, appellate division, and then the Supreme Court reversed and remanded for a new arbitration hearing. And the Supreme Court found that the DEP's expert opinion failed to provide evidence to support the finding that this contaminant migrated from the bottom of nearby waterways to petitioner's property via sandy floodwaters. So the Supreme Court held that the arbitrator appeared to have a misconception about the theory, which rendered its decision arbitrary and capricious. That's the standard. In other words, it was evidenced by the preponderance of the evidence, and in this case, they said it was arbitrary and capricious. Now, there was a dissenting opinion, and Justice Ferdinand Vena rejected that conclusion that the arbitrator misconstrued the expert's opinion and was inconsequential because petitioner failed to carry its burden. So that it's always necessary for those of us who are attorneys to figure out what is the burden of proof. What do we have to show to carry our, to carry it? In other words, who has the burden? What is the burden? And what evidence is needed to reach that burden? So interesting, from a legal standpoint, this is interesting. From the property owners, obviously, huge, because if they can get funding to clean this up, because if not, this is just unbelievable amount of money to clean these sites up. I was involved only in one environmental case, and it was not here in New Jersey. I was actually not an attorney, but it had to do with contamination from oil company and service stations. And the interesting thing was how do you prove where the contamination came from? One of the issues in the case I'm thinking about is it was one of those old-fashioned, fairly small areas with a gas station on it. And the environmental, this was in another state, and they were ordered to clean up. And the question is, should another neighboring property be responsible for some of it? And in fact, in this case, they were able to show that one of the complaint was that they had that contamination from this station was found like a mile or so away. However, they were able to prove that there was a river between the two properties, and so they couldn't possibly, the contamination couldn't possibly have come from that. And the interesting thing I learned back then would have been, number one, never buy a property where there was a gasoline station, or certainly if they did repairs, because one of the things that came out in that particular case is that in the old days when they changed oil, they would just have a hole down in the ground and dump the oil down in the ground. So, of course, it contaminated, and, you know, at some point, most of those contaminants by themselves will dissipate to some extent, depending on what they are. But I thought it was, very interesting here as to the difficulty it would be to prove whether or not, and since they had the burden of proof, whether or not whether or not it was a oil discharge because of Sandy or contamination of the soil based on historic fill. And I guess maybe only lawyers can get interested in some of that, and chemists and, people that, like that. Now, there was another case, COBA versus the Ford Motor Company, and this is a federal case. And so this was the appellate court, the Third Circuit, which is part of New Jersey, or New Jersey is part of the Third Circuit. And in this case, the plaintiff appealed from the district court that granted summary judgment to the defendant, Ford Motor Company. And the plaintiff filed a putative consumer class action against the defendant seeking damages arising from the declamination of the lining of fuel tanks of certain models of trucks manufactured by Ford. And the plaintiff alleged that the defendant Ford knew about the problem suffered by those models and knew that it was caused by a defect, but failed to remedy the defect and continued to sell the vehicles with the defect. And repaired affected vehicles, knowing that the repairs would not solve the problem. So the district court initially exercised jurisdiction over plaintiff's action pursuant to the Class Action Fairness Act. And then the district court granted summary judgment to the defendant on three of the claims and simultaneously denied the motion for class certification as moot. So then on appeal, the Third Circuit considered whether the district court's denial of class certification served to divest the court of jurisdiction and whether a, quote, materials or workmanship, end quote, warranty extended to design defects under New Jersey law, and whether a reasonable jury could find that defendant knew the alleged fuel tank defect was the cause of the declamination problem. So the Third Circuit affirmed the district court's grant of summary judgment to the defendant, and the appellate court first ruled that denial of class certification did not divest the district court of jurisdiction, holding that they were not divested, and holding that jurisdiction is typically determined at filing or removal And then, however, the court ruled the defendant's materials and workmanship warranty did not cover the design defects. And finding that the term, and they used a specific term, defects in materials or workmanship unambiguously excluded design defects. So that Ford got around this one by not giving a warranty against design defects. And so the court held that the delamination was a design defect because defendant Ford planned to use the lining and rather than improperly applying a lining material. So the court further found that there was not an issue that could be tried regarding the defendant's knowledge of the alleged defect and finding insufficient internal evidence that Ford knew the cause of the problem was the design of its tank rather than from contaminated fuel. So this all these folks out there that thought they were going to get their cars or trucks fixed, not going to be happening. So let me wrap up with that, and we'll go to the news, and after that we'll come back with the sports guys. And hopefully we might hear from Bill Wolfson, who's at Steelers training camp this afternoon. If not, John absolutely promised he'd be here on time. So we shall see, because, of course, attorneys are never liars. And I'll be back after the news. And if John isn't here, unfortunately, you may be hearing all about the Packers. So stay tuned.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Employers in July added 164,000 jobs, according to the Labor Department. White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow tells Fox Business he's pretty happy with the report.
We faced severe monetary tightening in 2017 and 2018, although we're hovering still around the 3% mark. So I think it's a very good report.
President Trump says he's negotiated a deal that will make it easier for American farmers to export beef to the European Union.
My administration is standing up for our farmers and ranchers like never before. We're protecting our farmers.
The deal will lower trade barriers with the EU, and the president estimates it will increase duty-free exports to $420 million. Your final numbers on Wall Street for the week. The Dow was down 98 points to close at 26,485. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
This is Shell Rotella Gas Truck. This is truck oil. This is hunting, fishing, camping way off the grid oil. This is climbing mountains in the rain, snow, and mud oil. This is hauling the world's greatest tailgate party halfway across the country, oil. This is not top-down cruising to the corner store for cupcakes oil. This is Shell Rotella Gas Truck, just for your truck and SUV, oil. Find Shell Rotella Gas Truck at your local Advance Auto Parts today.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are your diabetes go-to. Stop by and talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
North Korea is continuing to test short-term missiles. With more on the story, here's USA Radio Network's John Clemens.
North Korea conducted two separate missile launches during the early morning hours on Friday, making the third such test in just over a week. The latest launch of the ballistic missiles were fired into the sea off its eastern coast, flying 137 miles on an apogee of 15 miles. Experts say the launch was viewed more as a message to South Korea to help stop the U.S. economic sanctions imposed by Washington against North Korea. President Trump says he's not overly concerned about any violations of international treaties.
Short-range missiles, we never made an agreement on that. I have no problem. We'll see what happens. But these are short-range missiles. They're very standard.
I'm John Clemens.
The Trump administration could soon reach a deal with the Taliban that would bring troops home from Afghanistan. The Washington Post is reporting that the Taliban would agree to the ceasefire. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to